This is the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, presented by Hami Media and the Pro Wrestling Reflection, where we discuss the very best of the best in pro wrestling history.
And what you gonna do when Hulkamania and the largest arms in the world revolve on you?
The two soundest wrestlers in the World Wrestling Federation, maybe in the history of the World Wrestling Federation, are right here, right now. Mr. Perfect and the Excellence of Execution, the Hitman.
WrestleMania weekend isn't complete without the Heartbreak Kid, and he is on his way.
He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family.
They think they got the answers. I changed the question.
You will rest in peace.
Get used to it in Ric Flair. Who you're looking at, the man.
This man!
What is going on there, Reflectionites? What is going on there, Big Vito Lights on the Big Vito brand? What is going on to the Big Vito Lights on the Patreons, on the Twitch? It is WrestleMania weekend. It's been a long, it's a marathon. I mean, we got Hall of Fame, we got NXT TakeOver, we got Saturday WrestleMania, we got Sunday WrestleMania, we got Raw on Monday, we got NXT again on Tuesday, we got Dynamite, we got Impact, we got MLW. God damn it, it's an overflow of wrestling. I know you wrestling fans are burnt out, but you know what? Just please hang on for another hour. Just please do me that favor, because we're not part of that. Because we're part of the nostalgic train. We're part of the nostalgic feel of professional wrestling. The Pro Wrestling Reflection on the PWS Network at Podbean.com. This is the Pro Wrestling Spotlight episode on the PWS Network, and I am that man. I am the reigning and defending, undisputed, undeniable, unconquerable, unfathomable head of the table of the PWR podcast, head of the table of the PW Hustle, head of the table of your mama in my lap. But that's another story for another day. The only objective man in the IWC, YWC, the only objective man in politics, the only objective man on this here planet Earth, the Professor Chaberto Veracruz. Welcome to the spotlight. And before I introduce my cohorts in crime, you know, the professor always liked to, you know, do a little curveballs for all the Reflectionites out there. The Magnificent Seven, the Elite Eight, the Naughty Nine, the Terrific Ten, for the people on the Twitches. You know, when we do the spotlights, we talk about a wrestler. When we do the spotlights, we talk about events. But you know what? I wanted to pull a curveball here for all the Reflectionites out there. I want to do a spotlight series. We might be doing it for the next couple of weeks. We'll see how it goes. But I want to focus on a particular championship belt. And this particular pro wrestling spotlight, we are going to delve into our history, our memories of the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship belt of World Wrestling Federation or World Wrestling Entertainment. But before we do that, let's welcome the cohorts in crime. The man is back from his birthday ventures. He was in Debo's house. He stole $200 and knocked his ass out. He went into the 90210 Brandon Walsh house. He stole the pinball machine. He went into the Brady Bunch house. He had sex with Alice on her bed. He's the prodigal one. He is Mr. UFC. JB, how are you doing, my friend?
What's going on, Professor? What's going on, TW? Yes, I am back, the prodigal one, JB. Back on another episode of PWR. Glad to be here. Glad to be talking about that sexy thing TW's holding. I'm not talking about his dick. I'm talking about the Intercontinental title.
You could be talking about both.
You seen it? Wow, okay, cool. See, and y'all talk about me, Reflection. I slot into men's DMs. I'm just saying right now. But, of course, my other cohort in crime, he is holding the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship belt, the one that the Ultimate Warrior held at WrestleMania 6 at the Toronto Sky Dome against Hulk Hogan. He is your friend and mine, the Gorilla Monsoon, the Bob Mackey, the Lord Alfred Hayes of the PWR Podcast, the conservative liberal, the idiot of the Dum Dum Duos, Mr. Wonderful TW, Tommy Wonder. He is the champion. How are you doing, my friend? You're not on the list of champions. I looked at Wikipedia. Tommy Wonder is not on the list of champions.
It's funny because I got pictures of me when I actually was a champion with the big gold and with the old WCW United States title belt, not the the cool one Magnum TA had, the one WCW had. It actually said WCW on it. But no title belts in Michigan ever. That's how it was in the Indies in the 90s. They just bought a replica belt and put some white out over the WWF logo or WCW logo and put their promotions logo on. That was terrible. But, or they found some rinky-dink. We used to call them the pop can title belts, the old tag belts I had in Great Lakes Wrestling. But near and dear to our hearts, these belts. And if I saw them today, they would. I get it why people have nostalgia for them. You know, in the moment, you think it's a terrible belt, much like the new version of the IC title belt. I think that and the U.S. title are horrible. But I think for the guys who have it now, 20 years from now, their fans are going to think of those belts the way we think of this one. And I think personally, this, not, and you know what? It's kind of like a girl with a good personality. She goes from a 7 to a 10, right? Uh-huh. Because of the matches that were had for this, it made this belt even better. But I still think this is the, lack of a better term, prettiest title belt of all time. This right here, the look of this, I know you like the universal, the blue and the red versions, JB, but this belt is just beautiful. And part of that is because it's usually on the shoulder of a Rick Rude, a Mr. Perfect, an Ultimate Warrior, a Ricky Steamboat, a Shawn Michaels, a Bret Hart. It's on someone's shoulder that looks good with it. Nowadays, not the case. I'm sure the great Khali probably was Intercontinental Champion at some point now.
Well, before anything, I'll go to JB if he has to retort this. But I just want to say, you know, before we talk about the lineage and the champions and even the matches here, Reflection Nights, you know, let's talk about the designs. TW was holding up a design that's been, you know, preordained in the brains of wrestling fans. I believe that design was from 1986 to maybe 2000.
Was Tito the first one that had it? He had the old version, and then he had this
Tito was the first one to have that shape and design. It went on until about 2002 before WWE kind of messed it up with the unification-type things after that. Then it got reinstated in 2003, and then it changed into a blue with like an oval. It looked like the flat earth kind of thing. And that held up for about until maybe 2013. Then they went backwards. They went back to nostalgic times with a
Cody
twist.
Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes was one of the first ones to hold the revamped nostalgic version of the title. And now the design is of what Big E is holding. It was a gift from Sami Zayn to Shinsuke, and then it went from Shinsuke to Big E and all that stuff. So we're not going to go into all the lineage of the shapes or which designs are the best ones, but you know, I'm kind of partial, JB, to what TW's holding. I think that is a premier staple. Just like people who are New Japan fans, they like that heavyweight championship that's been held by Okada for many, many years. And now they changed it in the last 2 weeks. And people don't like change. We like what we like. And that's pretty self-evident because that shows our fandom. That shows our knowledge of it. You know, and again, some people just don't like change. What say you, JB, about the designs of the Intercontinental title?
For me, the best title in terms of looks is the one that TW has, that golden era, that Hasbro era. You know, that's the title. That's the title. I will disagree, because I have to, with TW saying that's the prettiest title. Because for me, the best-looking title will always be that double-winged eagle, the world championship. That will always be my favorite title. But in a close second is that Intercontinental title. And I really hate, because I believe, and Professor, correct me if I'm wrong, that Intercontinental title was the longest title from, like, history that they did not change, because they changed all the titles, and I think the Intercontinental one was the last one to be changed. So when they changed with that, it was like all of my childhood memories of the belt was gone when they got rid of it.
In terms of years lasting, the design that TW held was kind of like the longest one. And if you want to count the revamped nostalgic version, if you add those years together, yes, that is the longest designed title in WWE history. I mean, before that title that TW was holding,
You know, the Intercontinental Championship was actually green with a silver plating. And it kind of looked
like Patterson one?
The Pat Patterson one that he held and Tito Santana actually held and Don Morocco and Pedro Morales held. That, you know.
It was tiny.
It was tiny, but those belts actually catered to the times, you know, the 70s and stuff like that. So, you know, mostly the belts catered to the times of wrestlers. You know, the smaller wrestlers had the smaller belts, you know, and the 80s was the flashier times. Even with the Ric Flair Big Gold belt, you wanted to, it was a presence on cable television reflection. It was a presence on, you know, weekend syndication TV. You need an identifiable wrestler, number one. And two, an identifiable belt, so this way people know that you're going to be, you know, it's going to be a big match. It's going to be one of those, you know, it's a big effing deal. And that is the U.S. Championship that Matt Riddle's holding right now in 2020 Wonder. So, you know what? Let's get into the, let's say, the history of the Intercontinental Championship belt, guys. And, of course, the first recognized champion is Pat Patterson, but the history is kind of funky because, as they say, guys, Pat Patterson had to travel to Rio de Janeiro to defeat Johnny Ross in a tournament that never existed. In actuality, he defeated Ted DiBiase for the North American Championship, and they renamed it. You know, they renamed the North American Championship to the Intercontinental Championship to combine the, you know, the South America place with North America. So this was that is the meaning of the Intercontinental Belt. So I'm going to go to TW right now. We're not going to talk about champions here. TW has said it on the PWR podcast. The Magnificent Seven knows this. JB knows this. The Professor knows this. TW, you have called this belt the Workman's Championship. It is a precursor. Maybe they always say it's a precursor to the person stepping up to the next level. This person will be a future WWE champion. Why do you call it the Workman's Champion? And do you still believe that the Intercontinental Champion, a person who is an Intercontinental Champion, can be springboard to the WWE Championship?
That's a loaded question, air. That ain't even just a question. That's a damn census. So, A, first of all, it was the working man's title, period. Then it was, and once Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels started becoming champion, then it was, if you made the IC title, you were going to be world champion. Austin, Rock, Owen would have, I believe, all those guys. But in the 90s, it was the belt you put on the guys who were never going to be world champion. It was their ceiling because Hogan was never going to not be champion. So It was the belt, A, that changed hands, and B, they stole the show. I mean, I'm not going to say his name now because I'm going to save it because I think he's going to be one of your guys' votes for worst IC champion. But I think even this guy having the IC title, he's worthy of the heritage of it versus he was never going to be world champion. Fuck it, I'll say it. The Mountie. He was an Intercontinental Champion long, but he's someone I liked. He was a good hand, as Travis said. He was very entertaining. I'll always remember that moment I had with him at the Palace of Auburn Hills, where he egged us to cheer him the whole match and then turned on us at the end. That's a childhood memory I'll never forget. It was awesome. It's something I did when I wrestled later on as a heel. I would get some kid, I'd pick him to be the guy that I'd go to all the time because of the money. But he wasn't champion long, right? But as far as now I think I blame the IWC, YWC. I think now, first of all, it's
blame him, TW. I blame him all the time.
It's one of 900 hot potato titles that just changes hands like pinball machines. But I think it's the belt they put on guys to shut up the internet people who say guys get used wrong. And so the problem with that is, 1 minute, Bobby Lashley wasn't even champion long. Granted, he did springboard to become world champion, but Riddle has it, and then didn't Riddle lose it to somebody and win it back already? Or
Riddle never had the IC title. It was the U.S. championship.
No, I meant when he first won it, so I'm confusing him with Drew winning the world title, losing it, and winning it back. But the IC title and the U.S. title now, they're pacifiers. They're to shut up the internet fans by putting belts on guys. But the problem is they put it on everyone. You know what I mean? Like the back in the day, Perfect would have the belt for a year before he lost it. Hogan had the belt forever, right? 4 years, never lost it. In the 4 years that he lost it, didn't lose it, you only had dropping it to Macho. Macho dropping it to Steamboat. Steamboat losing to Hulk Hogan, man. And that's it. And then finally the Warrior beat him, and then the Warrior gave it up on the night he beat Hogan. So when finally Hogan lost the belt.
Don't forget Rude.
But I'm saying, Rick Rude, but I'm saying, there was only a handful of guys in the 5 years that Hogan was champion that long who held that belt because it meant something. Now, you could win it on Monday Night Raw and then lose it back on SmackDown, and who cares about that? Like, it's a hot potato. Now, it's fine if you know, like what happened with Edge and Jarrett. Jarrett did it as a favor. You know, I heard Edge told me personally he didn't know he was winning that night. Jarrett just stayed down, and then he lost it back the next day.
Okay, hold on to those stories. I'm going to go to JB for a second. You know, a young JB. Now, what TW said is kind of true, but I think the 80s was actually the best decade for the Intercontinental Championship because it had the rivalries. Tito against Don Morocco. Tito against Greg the Hammer Valentine. Tito against Macho Man. Macho and Ricky. Ricky and Honky. Honky and Ultimate Warrior Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude. What say you about what is the greatest decade of the Intercontinental Championship in JB's mind?
Yeah, I was the only thing that would ever rival it for me would be the 90s. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about what was in the 90s. And the first part of the 90s was some solid stuff. But, mm-hmm. I don't know when's the best time to bring this up. But once we hit, again, in my opinion, once we hit 95-ish, to me, mm-hmm. it started declining. Once fucking Jeff Jarrett won the Intercontinental title, it was all like, this is garbage now. And it was mm-hmm. almost downhill from there. I mean, it picked up a couple times, but before that point, everybody that won the title, you know, you had a lot of good feuds, and we'll get into the matches and stuff like that. But, yeah, to answer your question, the 80s most definitely had the best title matches, the best guys holding the title, and a bunch of things. I will disagree with TW in a way where you said Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were those guys who were, like, the next in line because, Macho was that guy, you know. Ricky Steamboat was going to be that guy. They offered Ricky Steamboat the top position, but he turned it down because he didn't want the dates. He wanted to spend time with his wife and kid and blah, 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 blah. But he was going to be the guy. Warrior. So there was a couple guys before him, Pedro Morales, etc. So I don't think it started with Bret necessarily, but from Bret on probably is where, I mean, even, what were you going to say?
I meant the feeling that once you won that belt, you were going on to become world champion. Nobody thought Macho Man, when he was, Macho Man's arguably the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. No one thought, one day he's going to beat Hogan and win the belt. Because Hogan beat everybody. That's what I mean by that.
Right. It was during that whole time.
That's what I mean by that. Like, Pedro had all, he's the first, you know,
Triple Crown. What
the hell's it called? The three.
Triple Crown.
He's the first Triple Crown. But it wasn't a foregone conclusion that, he's IC champ. He's going to be world champion one day. Once guys like Bret, Perfect, Shawn, all those guys had it, you knew next level is world title matches. And I will say this, guys like Rick Rude, Perfect, Macho Man, and even Greg Valentine at times, they were the feeder fish to Hogan. Those were the guys who went on to fight him, and they would lose. But they were never going to be the guy that beat Hulk Hogan. You know what I mean? And the IC belt was almost a heel belt that we watched babyfaces chase, and that was by design. Hogan was the babyface world champion defending all against the bad guys, and then the heels had that belt, and the babyfaces chased it.
Mm-hmm. And just to talk a little bit about history with the title, not anyone in particular matches, the Intercontinental title was very huge when we're talking about running territories, not running territories, sorry, but having house shows, because typically Vince would run an A and B show, and obviously Hogan would headline the A show, but the B show would typically be headlined by whoever the Intercontinental Champion was. So it would have to be someone that could go, like we said, it was a journeyman, but also someone that could still draw at the same time. And 9 times out of 10, it worked out. They seem to, back in those days, always have the right guy in that slot. Not like now where you said, like, every other day the title changes hands. You know, that's one thing that really...
Well, you know what? For example, if Hulk Hogan was headlining Madison Square Garden as the A show, let's say...
NASCAR or something.
No. Let's say Tito would have the Intercontinental belt at the Westchester County Center. So it's a smaller scale, but still a great opportunity to sell out the B-show, as you would say. And you know what? And TW,
and he would still be a draw. That would be a huge draw.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, you know, like I said, the formula of the Intercontinental Championship, as TW mentioned, Reflection Nights, has changed because a great example is Pedro Morales. I mean, he went from heavyweight champion in the 70s to Intercontinental Champion in the 80s. So it was, you know, as we say that it is a precursor to being, it's a litmus test to the WWE title, Pedro actually, you know, validated the Intercontinental Championship with his theme of being a Puerto Rican heavyweight champion. So, you know, me, I'm going to be biased here. He's one of the greatest Intercontinental Champions of all time. So I just wanted to put that history out there because sometimes the formula wasn't there. If you was a heavyweight champion, and that's the thing that, guys, you know, as I love Dusty Rhodes booking because he's perfect for this because in the NWA, when he lost the heavyweight championship, he could go after the U.S. title. If he lost the U.S. title, he could go after the television title. Vince McMahon never had that same thought process. Why do you agree with Vince? Because I actually think it's stupid.
So I think I'm going to talk about.
It's that way now.
Right. So that's the thing. Like, and I mentioned this before. I don't watch current day products. So I'm talking. What I'm talking here is before, like, let's say 2000. Bring it.
It's the board. Bring it everywhere.
Here's my thing. No matter what we say, the number one title in the company back in those times was the world title. Number two was the Intercontinental title. So I find it odd that someone who's been main eventing and world title running around the country with the world championship go down a notch for the IC title. Probably is why we never saw Hogan win the Intercontinental title. He might have had one-off matches for it, but he never really won it. Look at all those guys. Those guys, no one with the world title ever came back down back in that era and won the IC title. Yes, they had matches because they were just, you know, doing matches. But they never won back the title because it would have been looked as a step down. Why would you, if you have the top prize and you're on that level, why would you bring yourself back down to go after the second prize? However, if they did do it back then, it would make sense. If they didn't, it would be okay because the IC title was still prestigious. If they do it now, it means it's stupider now versus back then because now all the belts are shit. And that goes for the world title. But if you're going to see which one's the number one, obviously the universal title, world title, the top two. So for someone to be on that level in present day and then drop to like a shit title, it looks weird. Like Bobby Lashley, for example. I mean, I don't watch, but I think he's the IC champ or was. That's fucking weird. This is a guy that fucking headline WrestleMania running around the world title picture and then he dropped to the IC. I don't know if he was doing the US or whatever he does. To me, it's weird. I don't know what you guys think.
But the logistics, he was ECW champion. He never, this is his first WWE run as the heavyweight champion. So it didn't work. You know, he actually did the step up. He didn't do the step back. So
the step up is fine. And that goes with building as well. I mean, when you build a character, you know, honestly, if I was a promoter and a booker, I would always have the same scenario. I would want my guy to probably have a run at the tag team titles. If he was in a partnership, I could, you know, build a partnership. If not, IC title or whatever the mid-card title is, and then to the world title. I wouldn't have him go to world title, to mid-card, to world title again. That, to me, that's weird. If that's the case, these titles shouldn't have any rankings. They should be all on the same level if that's the case.
TW, anything you want to add?
I will say this, two things. One, there's way more guys now, so it's easier to fall down to the bottom of the ladder. Like in UFC, you have weight class titles, right? And you've had guys drop a weight class and then win a belt in a different weight class where some people viewed it as, oh, he went to the weaker division, and other people think guys went up to go to the tougher division. No, I'm not saying everyone thinks that. Critics will say, oh, he couldn't be the guy in that weight class, so he dropped out. But then there was guys that had belts in two weight classes.
Three or four people. Let me just say something real quick. Okay. In UFC, I can't say boxing, but in UFC, if you go up or down a division, they don't say it's a weaker division. The best division right now in UFC,
the world champion in that weight class.
The best division right now in UFC is 155, and it's nowhere close to the top. I mean, there's four other divisions above it, three or four other divisions above it. But the best division is the 155. So the reason why someone would choose to go up or down is to say, I'm a two-division champ. Not because, oh, it's a weaker class. Or you know, and like that.
My point was to say wrestling's not that way. It's not right. weight classes. It's a world right. champ. It's an IC champ. So I would say modern day, Cena never dropped back down. Once that dude was world champion, that's all he ever was a world champion, and that's
He was the U.S. champion, and he actually made a title better.
When he had that, when he had that, what was it called?
The first
Open Challenge. Right. The U.S. Open Challenge. No, that's what I'm trying to say. I would say this, TW, and then you can answer this back, because, again, I agree with you guys that modern times in the 2000s and today that, you know, you can fluctuate back and forth. You can be the heavyweight champion, IC champion, or U.S. champion. But a person like John Cena is a great example of that. He went down willingly. Number one, I air quote this, willingly, to bring a prestige to a title, like the U.S. title. And the U.S. Open Challenge just helped that belt.
Right.
And that was a great time on Raw. So, you know, it can happen.
But that was that one time. I forgot about that. But that's what I meant is guys of his stature, like I can't remember Randy Orton other than maybe he was in a feud with somebody and then took the belt. And that's what they do modern day. Something like in the mid-2000s. Ric Flair pursued the Intercontinental belt because of the heritage of the Intercontinental belt. That was the storyline, like, hey, the greatest whoever did this were Intercontinental champions. I want to add my name to the list of that heritage. So they make sense of it. And then you got a guy like The Miz, who I just found this out a week or two ago. He's the only two-time Grand Slam champion. He's won every belt twice. No one else has ever done that. Guys have won the belt a million times and not won these other ones. Like, I don't think Cena's ever been Intercontinental champion, as far as I know. But if he was, it was – but that's my point. Once he elevated from that first U.S. title to world champion, the only exception was when he did the U.S. Open Challenge, when he was basically a part-time guy. And so you're not going to – but like a modern-day champion who I think is good and is basically modeled after the UFC, it was Brock as champion because he held it for a long time. He only wrestled on pay-per-views. He had big matches, and it was literally the formula of UFC where he fought every few months, defended the belt until he finally lost it. And so that belt, he brought some heritage, you know, not heritage, but prestige back to it. But every other belt is a hot potato belt. And I would say the modern day belt for me, I know you guys like other stuff, to me, and it's an ugly ass belt, but I already know one day I'm going to own it because for me, as a modern fan, the only thing I actually get fanboyed about is NXT, is that North American title. Because it doesn't change hands as often as the NXT title. And the NXT champion, the second you win it, you know you're getting called up to the Raw or SmackDown roster. It's so predictable. Like, as soon as Bobby Roode won it, I'm like, oh, he's going to SmackDown. And he did. He lost it. Then that guy went. It's very rare for a guy to lose that belt and stick around, with the exception of Mr. NXT 1 and Mr. NXT 2, Adam Cole and Gargano. Those guys won it and never left. Tommaso Ciampa got hurt, so it's hard to tell. But Karrion Kross, he's going up. There's no way he's staying in NXT, whatever the hell his name is. TikTok, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's Karrion Kross, Killer Kross.
Killer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for me, the NXT North American title, I hate that ugly belt. But what I'm saying is the lineage of it is pure. Like, even that rough kid winning it was very 1-2-3 kid beating Razor Ramon, right? And he didn't lose it right back. So that belt, I think, is the only thing close to the modern day, like a guy has that belt and he's your workhorse, right? Because Finn Balor's not on every week wrestling, but that North American champion, Gargano's on every single week, either defending the belt or being the heel that Edge just recently said doesn't exist anymore, the coward heel, who gets forced to wrestle in matches that he doesn't want to wrestle in. So I think that's the closest thing to how I felt about the Intercontinental title back then. And champions were, Macho Man cheated to win. Greg Valentine cheated to win. Tito overcame that to win and then got cheated to lose. Steamboat overcame all that stuff and won. It was, You knew when it was the Intercontinental title, it was going to be a wrestling match. It wasn't going to be, even if it was in a cage, the dude still worked. It wasn't just throwing each other's head into the cage like Hogan Bundy. It was such a good belt.
Understandable reflection, Ice. When we look at this way, go ahead, JB.
Yeah, let me just say something real quick, because I hate when people say, oh, if you have this guy as a champ, it'll bring up the belt. Nothing against you, professional, but like you were saying with John Cena. The reason John Cena did up the U.S. title, but not because he's John Cena. That to me, that had no reason.
How dare you?
Let me explain. Because I don't watch current
products. I kick you off the PWR product. No, go ahead.
Can you guys tell me somebody, because I don't watch current day products, someone that I would know that's more of like a bottom tier guy, but that I would know?
Sami Zayn.
Okay, Sami Zayn. If I'm a promoter, I can have Randy Orton, who's arguably one of the greatest guys ever, I can have him win the IC title, and I can also have Sami Zayn win the title, but I guarantee if I was to book it, I would have Sami Zayn come out making that title much better. And you know how you do it?
How'd you do it?
It doesn't matter who the fuck Randy Orton is or Sami Zayn is. To me, the name never mattered. What mattered to me was the run. And that's why John Cena's up the title, because he had a good run with it. Randy Orton holds the title for 2 months. It means nothing. Who cares, Randy Orton? Sami Zayn owns it for 14 months. That title now means something. It doesn't matter if it's Sami Zayn. He's now, because he's defended the title at least a minimum of 10, how many ever times in a year and a couple months. And because of that run, that title becomes stronger. And that's why if WWE wants to make these titles worth something anymore, it needs to stop being, as TW puts it, hot potato, and give these things some bills. Have some of these guys having good long reigns. Who cares about what fans say in IWC and YWC about this guy's not getting a title? Forget about all that. What happened to the good old days where the Jake the Snakes didn't need a title to get over? What about those guys?
I can answer that question. There was no internet for people to complain and bitch and moan. So this way people would actually rally. They would hashtag Jake the Snake for the IC belt. They would actually do it. You know that.
How is this guy not a champion?
He was champion in Mid-South in Bill Watts territory. Why can't he do it in WWE?
I mean, Triple H is a blind take because he wasn't booked that way.
That I think should have been a champion, but in the end, didn't need a belt, was Junkyard Dog. I loved that guy every time I saw him on TV, and what I resigned myself to was he was always friends with the guy who was going for the title or already had it, right? So that's, to me, it was just he had bad luck. He never got a chance to go for the belt because his friend was chasing it, which means that would have been a great heel turn. To have Junkyard Dog turning heel would have been just as monumentous as Hulk Hogan going NWO. Because he was such a baby face.
That would have so just awesome.
Made everybody like, wow, JYD?
JYD was the victim of white privilege, and that's why he lost at WrestleMania 1. Well, he didn't get the title. He won by disqualification. But you know what? We talked about the 80s.
Right? That was Valentine. Replicating Starcade.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about a little bit of the 80s. And how great the feuds were, and just like JB said, that they actually, main evented the B shows. Let's talk a little bit about the 90s, where TW was saying people like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were being groomed for the WWE Championship. And I guess you can look at that. After Bret Hart won in 91 from Perfect, it was the springboard because Bret Hart in 92 became the champion.
Right after he lost his belt to Bulldog.
Right, and then again, Shawn Michaels wins the belt.
Bulldog was being groomed as well, but he decided to stick needles in his ass right. And lost that spot.
So let's look at the 90s, guys. As best as you remember, we looked at, Bret Hart groomed. Shawn Michaels eventually was groomed. He then fulfilled his prophecy in 96. Diesel, Austin. So we look at that Triple H and Rock. The Rock. So you look at that, and I'm going to go to JB here. In the 90s, was it the matches? Was it the promos? When someone had the Intercontinental title that engaged you? What say you, JB?
I think it was a mixture of both. I mean, the 90s had some classics, man. I mean, we had Bret Perfect. We had Shawn Razor times two. We had some really, really good matches. Good storylines, and it was still at that sweet spot where there were still good workers in the 90s. I mean, when you get to, like, Kevin Nash and stuff, and, like, Jeff Jarrett and those type of guys.
Kevin Nash is a good worker, dude. He might not be a great wrestler, but he's a good worker. The guy worked the crowd.
Let JB go. Go ahead, JB. It's still your floor.
How in the world can you possibly say it with a straight face?
Because he's sold drinking. Merch.
He's drinking.
Let me, no, you know what? Let me, I'm going to agree with TW on this one. For a, that big man. I'm thinking of like true workman's work. I'm talking about chain wrestling.
You mean wrestling, right?
He was a good worker. He wasn't a good wrestler. Let me correct myself. You're correct.
He wasn't
a good wrestler. He was a good worker. And like you said, he could work the crowd and stuff like that. But he was a good wrestler. And back in those times, though, I was so into the storyline, but also into the I wanted to see the wrestling as well. And that's why, you know, Bret Perfect is one of my favorite matches. And I know we're not talking about matches specifically, but the 90s still had a good flow. But because, to me, it wasn't the entire 90s. It started falling off in the mid-90s. That's why it has to be right behind the 80s. Because the 80s, you can't pick out one point in the 80s that it wasn't on friggin' fire. There's no spot. From beginning to end, 80 to 89, it was on fire the whole time.
TW, what say you about... I know you was in the business in the 90s, so you wasn't watching wrestling as you always said, but you had to at least had a PWI mag or something to at least know who was the champion.
Yeah, but that here's the thing. I rattled off all the names of the guys that had the belt while Hogan was champion, right? And then we know about Perfect. We know about Perfect, Rude, Razor, Bulldog,
Jannetty,
Kerry Von Erich are the five guys who would have been world champions in a different time and place if they weren't in their own way. Because every one of them at some point blocked their own path to that world title. Kerry had one in the NWA, albeit for a cup of coffee. But for me, you know, I'm just going to go into it. JB talked about it. I almost said about it. When the title went over the cliff for me was when The Rock, Triple H, Austin, and all those guys had it. And there's two reasons. One, I think, and it hit me while you guys were talking, once they brought the European title around, I think they were going to try to make that the IC title of the 80s by having only so many guys have it. Sean, Bulldog, I think Owen. And then the IC title was going to become the hot potato title to fast track someone to become the world title. So once you get to the point where Austin, I think Austin might be the last guy to have it to like, it wasn't changing hands every week. And then once he got it, that's when it did. Once you get to the point where you can't keep track of who the fuck the champion was at any given point, done. Because guys had it for longer periods of time. Honky Tonk Man doing what he did, I hated it as a fan. It was absolutely brilliant.
Great business.
In hindsight. In hindsight, when that dude walked out on that match with Beefcake, like, nope, it's not time yet, and did it on his own, went into business for himself, it made that moment where the Ultimate Warrior came out in 13 seconds that much better, because it was 14 months people were dying to see that guy lose that belt, and he not only lost it, he lost it in a Goldberg squash before Goldberg was even in the business.
But TW, to be fair, in the 90s,
to be fair,
Vince Russo was booking in the mid-90s and
then I'm blaming
99. Because he thought he might not have thought it was hot potato. He was thinking about the ratings. Who in this particular segment would be a good ratings winner to have the belt? If Austin was a ratings winner with the belt, then so be it. If Triple H was a ratings winner with the belt, then so be it. And The Rock, etc. I'm not defending it, but I think because as much as we love the 80s, remember, it was only the weekend show, the syndicated shows. It was only primetime wrestling. So there wasn't, it was four pay-per-views. And in the 90s, we have to remember Eric Bischoff forced Vince McMahon's hand with one pay-per-view every month. So, you know, the oversaturation just started streamlining then, and now we're getting to the most ridiculous point that in a month we can have three pay-per-views in the month of April right now in 2021 or so. You know, the oversaturation makes the lineage in American titles really mean less. So I just wanted to say that. Go ahead, TW, finish your point about...
No, I agree, but that's my point. Like, as you were talking, it dawned on me, after Austin, Triple H, and Rock won all those IC titles, the next reign of guys to win it, and it meant something to me when they did. Don't get me wrong. I hated that belt, the one you call Flat Earth. That's the best. I hated that belt, but in hindsight, it looks better than that damn one they got now that looks like a damn belt buckle that you hit it, and all of a sudden it opens up, and you got a gun inside there or something. But
it looks like a cowboy belt.
Right. Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, Edge, Jarrett, China, all those guys ended up going on to win that title. And those were all guys who you would have loved.
China's not a guy. China has a vagina.
I realize, as I said that, someone's going to call me out on that. But Eddie...
Hashtag cancel TW.
You're going
or
into the
as they call him on another podcast.
TW, don't jump the 2000s. I will get to that, and I'm trying.
No. What I'm saying is those guys, I'm still in the 90s, damn it. I know we're not in the 2000s.
Yeah, that's what
but what I'm saying is the 90s is when it lost some of its lure, but those other guys ended up champion afterwards. All those guys I just mentioned, Angle, Benoit, and Eddie Guerrero, and Edge, those are guys that if they were champions in the 80s version of the title, we would have been fine with it. We would have been absolutely happy about it. But it was the fact that all four of them were the champion in the month of February. The shortest month there is, all four of them held the title. That's when it lost its prestige. And I brought up Sami Zayn to you guys because I don't like that guy. Like, I think on the internet I hate him as a human being. He's just such a condescending cunt. And I mean every word of what I'm saying. But he's on TV.
Shout out to all our female listeners.
No, I called a dude it. So I'm taking it back. So basically...
Don't take it back. Just keep
when
it
I see... No, I'm taking no, the word, word back. And you,
oh, okay.
You've never seen Clerks 2, damn it. So I knew you'd get it, JB, because you're the movie guy. But so... this made me lose... Sami Zayn. Every time I see him on TV, I'm like, they release all these people. How does this guy still have a job? And then they put the IC title on him when he was with Cesaro and the Old Men of Nations or whatever the hell they were called, the League of Nations. But that made me respect Sami Zayn. When they put that ugly-ass belt on him, I was like, damn it, now I got to take him serious. And I don't hate him as a character anymore. I don't like him as a human being at all. I don't like anything he feels or says or whatever. He basically tries to guilt everybody, bashes America, leave then, some bitch. But at the end of the day, putting the belt on him, I don't need him to have a 14-month reign like you were saying for it to mean something. I just think Sami Zayn being an Intercontinental Champion validated him in my eyes.
I want to say something, but let me ask first because, again, I don't watch. Is Sami Zayn currently right now a face or a heel?
Heel. He's a good heel, too.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, though, like, when you said you hated Sami Zayn and all that, that's exactly what they want. If he's a heel, that's exactly what they want.
It's die Rocky, die hate. It ain't I hate and I want to see someone beat him up. It's I hate him and I want to see him take a bad bump, and that way I won't see him on TV for 10 months. I'm kidding. I don't want that on anybody. I actually pray every time I watch wrestling that no one gets hurt while they're going to do the show, but I do that at every sporting event. But anyways, I don't like him as a human being, right? And for a while there, I didn't like Kevin Owens either. They're like peas in a pod. But I appreciate Kevin Owens now. No, I appreciate him now, right? He looks like me and Scott D'Amore had a baby and he stole my gear. But that's a whole other story. But at the end of the day, I like, you know, it's evolution, right? Sami Zayn, his character, like before I didn't like him as a human because of Twitter. I said it on the show before. He had a dad bod, right? Uh-huh. And he wears those tights that are like too low cut. Like it's just everything about him was like, ick, like, please get off my TV. Now that he dresses like Fidel Castro and he's got that bushy beard, the little cool green mash hat and all that.
It works.
He is. You love to boo him kind of thing. I've never loved to boo him, but I'm saying he does. He's the anti Daniel Bryan, which is ironic because that's where he basically got it from, was feuding with him. But he's anti-Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan's the little guy that you want to cheer on. Sami Zayn's the little guy that you want to get his ass kicked by a squash.
I get you. I don't want you to get on a tangent because I just wanted to focus on the 90s here. And, you know, you did say some names that did have the championship in the 90s, like Jared, like China, like Kurt Angle, you know, 99 and stuff like that. And... The point that I was trying to make here, guys, is, again, like with Vince Russo, you know, doing what he did, you know, getting the ratings, you know, of course, I can use China as an example of the 90s. You know, even though China was built like a brick house, you know, it was one of those things like it was a ratings grabber. I mean, you was in, I don't want to say invested, but you was intrigued. With China going against Jeff Jarrett, China going against Chris Jericho and all that stuff for the IC title. So, you know, it did bring eyes to the product. So, you know, In my humble opinion, once that, you know, WWE won the Monday Night Wars, ECW went out of business, then we get into the Ruthless Aggression, then I say that the plateau of the IC title started going down. You know, people, now we could go from 2000 actually to 2021 because, you know, as much as everything they tried, you know, they unified the belt and it went away, then it came back a year later. Then people like Shelton Benjamin had the belt. And
what did they unify it with? The U.S. title, right?
Yeah. When they did the brand, it was just, no, it was just the U.S. championship because they were, Vince wanted the U.S. title to mean something. So they merged it for some strange reason. And then they had a match between Triple H when he was the World Heavyweight Champion and King was the IC champion. And they unified the title and then the IC title was gone. So
it was a stupid fucking idea.
It was a stupid idea. So I don't want to get into that logistics here, but, you know, after the 2000s and the Ruthless Aggression, people like Shelton Benjamin had the championship. People like Kofi Kingston had the championship. And we know, guys, that they weren't ready. Cody had it. Well, yeah, true. I'm just saying, but we certain names at certain time periods, guys, they weren't ready for the main stage, so to speak. They were forever, in the professor's humble opinion, to be on the B show, main eventing the B show. They weren't ready to, you know, take the mantle from John Cena. They weren't ready to take the mantle from Triple H. They weren't ready to take the mantle from HBK because those guys were always heavily predicated to the heavyweight championship, whether it was the World Heavyweight title or the WWE championship, you know, when that was the two belts. So I'm going to go to TW here first with the 2000s. You know, we already know the overexposure, TW. We already know that stuff. But, you know, because of what happened in the 2000s, because of, you know, WWE owning the roost in America, because TNA was small, ROH was small, MLW was so small, Jericho, there's the Flat Earth Championship that Jericho had.
Yuck.
And Jericho was a champion, you know, sometimes they hit a home run with Jericho being the champion of the 2000s. You know, Randy Orton was a champion in the 2000s, but, you know, TW, it was a mixture. Some guys were ready for the championship, and some guys weren't ready for the championship. What say you, TW?
Well, that's the thing. It stopped being what it was, and it was a vehicle to...
For storylines, I know.
It was a vehicle to elevate. Like, you know, man, I hate how the NXT champion, the second he loses it, you know he's going north. You know, for lack of a better term, because where else you going from Florida? North. I hate that part. And then the IC title, yeah, I liked Flair as the champion, right? Because of the reasoning behind it. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember who the guy was. It might have been Jericho.
That he beat?
No. Someone who had already been world champion was like, I've never been IC champion, and I want to be. And again, it wasn't Flair. Flair was the whole, you know, what else are you going to do with him? He's 70. But there was, I want to say it was Jericho, his first IC title belt, but I think he had it before he was Unified World Champion. But
no, I think you're...
Then it was after. Then it was
you're Jericho. Talking, the only one that I can think off the top of my head is Sheamus, because he's never been the IC champion.
No, this person...
No, what you're saying, that's the only thing that registers, because I don't remember anybody saying that in the 2000s. Sheamus
was Jericho.
No, he was 9-time champion. He never said that.
Yeah, that's right. He's the most IC, and now the Miz is, but... I think the Miz is 14-time IC champ or something. But so does Sheamus win the IC title then?
No, he hasn't been. That's what I said. What you're saying.
Yeah, somebody did it and then won the belt. Like, that was the whole point was...
It was Flair. Flair was the one that said that. He was the one.
Are you sure it wasn't Cena with the U.S. title?
Might have been. No, because he had the spinning belt before he won the world title.
He drank it. He drank it, JD. He's drinking.
You just said it was Flair, so I'm just, you know, again, I was wrestling at the time, so it wasn't like I was keeping up with the Joneses.
I know.
I just think, for lack of a better term, and it sound like I'm agreeing with probably Meltzer, or I think Meltzer actually is the one that gets mad about this saying, but good, then I'll say it. It's a prop. That's what it is now.
It
literally is a prop now. Before, it was validation for guys. Now it's a prop. And again, yes, there's something to be said where a guy doesn't need a belt. In the 80s and 90s, having the Intercontinental title was a stamp of approval. It basically meant the fans liked you. It meant the fans liked you, and they put you in it. And I think, you know, you said this when you were talking. I had this thought pop in my head. Remember when they had the In Your House pay-per-view in between the big ones?
Yeah.
So you had the four big ones, and then you'd have an In Your House in between. And then by then, they had already added, I forget what they added, but you had the King of the Ring, the Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, WrestleMania, and Survivor Series. You had the five, and then they did the In Your Houses in between them.
That was
so that's 10. Huh?
They started doing that in 95 where they have like an In Your House.
No, no, no. What I'm saying is there was two other pay-per-views that they also had. It might have been another In Your House and then one other pay-per-view that was a regular pay-per-view, whether it was Hell in a Cell or something like that, whatever. I don't remember when that stuff started. But what they should have done, but you run the risk of making the belt seem like a consolation, they should have had the world title defended on the main ones other than WrestleMania, and the In Your House, the main event should have been the IC champ or the tag champs. Like, build it up to that. And what you can do if you do that is you can have a guy who's not having a match in your house having a storyline leading to that next pay-per-view
TW, sorry, are you talking about like back in the 90s or now, like what era, when should they have done that?
When they first started In Your Houses, they did it out of necessity. They had to keep up. So what they should have done to make them different,
it would have worked,
because you know what it made it out to me. They made them out to be like these low-budget pay-per-views. They were half off. Like, basically, it was just a glorified Raw, right? But if you would have made the In Your Houses the main event, the IC title or the tag belts, or even the women's champion, and then the main event for the main shows would have been the world champion, then the world champion would have only been on six pay-per-views. The IC champion would have been on six pay-per-views. And then you dilute it.
But again, the hindsight is that Vince was getting his ass kicked business-wise. Vince was going through litigation business-wise.
Yes, for sure.
So he just needed money.
Booking.
He needed money to pocket. So he had – it wasn't a B-show. It's a nice B-show concept that, you know, you get a discount being a fan, but, you know.
But eventually it ended up costing the same amount as every pay-per-view.
Of course, that's what it was.
Because it was $14.99.
Yeah, it was $14 or $19.99, but to WWE's point, I think it would have actually worked, because back then, that whoever your Intercontinental champion was could headline a pay-per-view, because it didn't have some Joe Schmo, it had someone that was solid, and because it was a $14.99 or $19.99, whatever it was, people I think would have still paid, whether it was your Intercontinental or your world champion, and it could have protected the world title a bit, and if they didn't want to do the In Your Houses with just IC title headlines, they could have did like maybe every three or even every other one.
World champion in a tag match on the In Your House.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. So they
fans have got to, you know, own up to what they wanted. They wanted so much more. You can't just say, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not going to put the, I'm not saying the fans got to get blamed for this shit, because fans wanted more. They wanted something, you know, they wanted something bigger. They wanted something better. And again, the overexposure, what Eric Bischoff did, Paul Heyman's ECW changed the presentation.
Eric Bischoff was totally fucked up everything, because he was putting WrestleMania-worthy matches on friggin' main event Nitro.
Yeah,
I mean, he gave away so many amazing matches for free on Nitro.
The concept forced Vince McMahon to change the idea of booking, and that's where we are today. So, you know, with the 2000s and stuff like that,
we can
list off of so many champions, reflectionize it, but then we'd be on here for about 3 hours. So, you know what?
In one year alone. 10 champions.
Post-90s. Yeah, in the 2000s, in 1 year, maybe like 2007, there was like 20 IC champions, and that's not a lie. That's a fact of life. So, you know, before that, let's go into another thing, and I'm going to start with JB here, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. So, you know, let's get into the modes of our favorite and least favorite Intercontinental champions. You can go first here, JB. It's not about, you know, top five. You know, if it's just one and one, that's cool with me. That's cool with the Reflectionites. Go ahead, JB.
So this is no order, but I have, when we talk about this topic, there's six matches that immediately came to my head, and I'm just going to run off of them real quick. But I'm pretty sure majority of these, you guys, I'm pretty sure me and TW are going to agree with some of these, because we're both Brett guys, but Brett versus Perfect at SummerSlam is a classic to me. Brett Bulldog, SummerSlam 92 is a classic to me. Both Razor Shawn matches are classics to me. There's also another match with Brett Piper, WrestleMania 8, classic to me. And the other one, which I'm really shocked came up in this, because I thought I would be the first one to bring it up, but actually TW brought it up. One of my favorite, not my favorite, but one of my favorite Intercontinental matches of all time, who was Ultimate Warrior defeating a Honky Tonk Man, even though the match was like freaking 14, 13 seconds, whatever it was. It's crazy the way it was, because Honky had this long-ass run for like over a year, and I mean, he called out, I need someone to come and fight me, and no one's coming out. Next thing you know, you hear that thunderous theme song, that first hit. He runs down, and in like a matter of a few seconds, we have a new champ, and it was booked so beautifully, and credit to Honky Tonk Man, because from the story I got, Honky Tonk Man was the one that booked that, because he was sitting with the Boogers and Pat Patterson and all them, and it was like, what? We can't have a proper match here. I can't have a proper match with Ultimate Warrior, because Ultimate Warrior is not a freaking wrestler. So it was Honky's idea to go ahead and make this a quick match. And props to him for willing to do the job in that sort of fashion, because that put Warrior even way more over. But yeah, those are some of my favorite IC matches. Another IC match, and I don't know if you want to call it a match per se, but I love the way that it came about is, as we know, they had tournaments in the past. Mr. Perfect 1-1, Texas Tornado 1-1. Mr. Perfect and Tito Santana, I think, were winners of tournaments. But if you guys remember, 1994...
Martel and Razor Ramon.
Yes. I don't remember why the title
it was a battle royal.
Correct. It was... And the reason why it's so vivid to me is because that month was the first month I actually had cable. And I remember watching that battle royal on Raw, and it came out to Martel... And Razor Ramon.
Logistics was that Shawn Michaels was suspended.
Right. But he did not want to
lost his smile.
No.
He failed the drug test in 93, early 94. But he did not return the belt to Vince. So Vince booked a battle royal to crown a new champion, and the two finalists were Martel and Razor, and they had a match the next Raw. Razor wins it, but then Shawn Michaels comes back from his suspension with his belt, and Vince said, oh, damn, I got a storyline here. Champion versus champion, and that's where WrestleMania 10 came to fruition. So that's a good match to even point out there, JD.
That whole battle royal and the way they did it, and you don't really see stuff like that too much anymore. So that's something that stuck on me. But yeah, those are some of my favorites. I mean, in that era, the 90s and 80s, there's a bunch, but those are some of my favorites.
That's cool. TW, what are your favorite moments of the Intercontinental Championship?
Of course, he stole them all, so, but he didn't say one of mine, and then I thought of another one, if I'm not mistaken, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Brett Bulldog.
I said that.
Razor Shawn, the first one. I don't remember the second one as much.
It was SummerSlam 95.
Yeah. And then for me, Mr. Perfect and Kerry Von Erich at SummerSlam, because Kerry Von Erich is someone who I saw very little video of, but was a ginormous fan of because of the After magazines. And then when I did get to see him, and when he came in as a Texas Tornado, man, I couldn't have been happier to have that guy in the WWE, and I didn't know all the issues he had, but he... If he wouldn't have had the demons he had, and he would have done better in WWF, he'd probably be a fifth head on my Mount Rushmore, because I love Kerry Von Erich that much. And Perfect, to me, every match he was in was great, because he just sold so, like, over-the-top ridiculous, but it still looked possible. Like, the bumps he took, because some of his best bumps were getting kicked in the back of the leg while holding the rope, and he would do that half flip and land on his head. He just was so good at making everybody else look like money. And I'm not sure if Brett and Perfect had any pay-per-view Intercontinental title matches.
Yeah, SummerSlam.
Okay, so that one, yeah, I think you even mentioned it. So
CW, you mentioned something that I just want to touch on, not to cut you off. You talk about Perfect and his class and him selling. That match you're talking about, Brett and Perfect at SummerSlam, people don't realize Perfect was badly in need of surgery. Badly. You could see him wincing for real, like, fuck yeah, baby. And he still put on a friggin' amazing classic.
Yeah, for sure. And then just to throw an oddball in there that I'm almost certain was the IC title was Santino's debut, where he came out of the crowd in Italy and beat Umaga for the Intercontinental title. And everybody was like, what the fuck? Like, I'm in the business at the time, so I'm like, whoa. Like, I bought it that he was some dude out of the crowd that just got a spot and they just did it for a spark plug. But it was such a wow moment that you could – and to this day, I love that dude. Like, and there's comedy for the sake of comedy that I don't like, but there's comedy where you just like the guy who's doing it. And Owen was a comedic guy at times. You know, the Blue Blazer stuff was comedic. Owen in Austin, where he broke Austin's neck and Austin won the Intercontinental title from him, was well on his way to being a great match before he got hurt. And obviously the ending taints it, but... but Owen, you know, he always and then Warrior Rude, the cage match. I think when Warrior won the belt back, or no, the cage match was
the world title. Rick Rude beat Warrior for the Intercontinental when Heenan hooked the leg.
And then the rematch was for the world title because it wasn't that long. Well, wait a minute.
No, the rematch.
The belt back.
He's drunk. The cage. Recognized.
What was the cage match?
It was SummerSlam '89 where he regained the championship back.
Correct.
It wasn't a cage.
When was the cage match?
They had it
was 90. It was 90.
They had to go back for the world title.
Yeah, huh? That was the world title, TW. It was in the 90. Cage.
Right. Yeah, but I remember the finish of Warrior suplex and Rude in and Heenan holding his leg and Rude getting it and maybe a mad as hell. But just they just there was never a bad IC title. It's hard to pick the best ever. I think best ever is Bulldog Brett Wembley Stadium. But, I mean, you can't touch that match.
Everything
is awesome because Bulldog was high as a kite on Coke the entire match.
And just listen. What are we doing, boss? What are we doing? And he did it. Brett called that match 3 days earlier, planning on practicing it, and didn't even get a chance to, but basically guided him through it. And it's just, to me, that makes the match even better to know the stuff behind the scenes.
The beauty, Reflection, I sent TW and JB, it's subjective again. This is our favorite moment. And for the professor, since you all said some stuff mostly in the 90s, I have to go at least, I'm going to pull it back, even way back. Because, you know, there's not that many 2000s that I like.
Oh, shit. How the fuck could we forget
Steamboat Savage?
What the hell?
Well, I was going to say.
My favorite match of all time.
I was going to say that.
Match is better.
I was going to say that. That will never eclipse anybody. That's the greatest Intercontinental Championship match of all time.
I'm gonna
pull it back even further because, you know, I was going to say this before I was rudely interrupted. But anyway, there's not that many 2000 memories that we have with the Intercontinental Championship. But, wait. I'm going to go back. Shut up. You're not going to take my thunder. Do not take the professor's thunder.
It's up for the grabs.
Tito against Don Morocco for that title was great. Tito, Greg Valentine, Pedro and Don Morocco for that championship belt is some classic MSG stuff. If you get on YouTube, just type in MSG from 1982-83. Don Morocco is an underrated champion, and he has some great Intercontinental title matches.
Look Reflection. Up, Morocco.
Yeah, so he's great. So, again, we could talk about a lot of matches here, but you know what? Let's go now into best and worst champions. And I'm going to go first here. You know, we all know that Honky Tonk Man billed himself as the greatest Intercontinental champion of all time. And the reign is great. I mean, from 87 to 88, you know, and the run that he had, that he never won a defense. He always lost by disqualification. This was the greatest run. He hardly had a win, and I loved it so much. You love to hate the Honky Tonk Man. That's why he's one of the greatest champions of all time. We can talk about Chris Jericho's 9. We can talk about Miz's 9. It's hard to say who is the greatest Intercontinental champion in the professor's humble opinion. I'm not going to use Honky Tonk Man because that's a cop-out to me. So I'm just going to go with Macho Man Randy Savage. I think what he did, once he got that belt from Tito Santana from the Boston Garden, was, you know, as TW said, Vince likes you. The fans actually hated Macho Man, but then because he won the title, he got cheered. He got cheered at the Garden, the Boston Garden. That's a tough place to get cheered. That's because people wanted change. People wanted a new direction. And Macho Man brought the charisma and the prestige up with that championship. To me, it just fit. And he had a woman by his side. So he had the woman, and he had the belt, and he had the flash and the pizzazz. So I'm going to say that Macho Man is the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. Now, if I'm going to go with worst, I got to have to go into the 2000s. And I hate to do this to him. He is a, you know, second, third generation guy. But when they gave Curtis Axel the Intercontinental Championship, it didn't match. He should have been the 24/7 champion. He should have been the Cruiserweight champion. But there's no way in hell, even with Paul Heyman in his corner, which made even no sense, should not have validated him as the Intercontinental Champion. So Macho Man is my favorite. Curtis Axel is my least favorite. So I'm going to go to JB here. What is your opinion of the subjectiveness of that?
So obviously this is something subjective. And let me say before I say this, I absolutely love the Macho Man Randy Savage. Love him. I don't think he's the greatest IC champ of all time. And people are going to say I'm biased here, obviously. But it's not. I'm not trying to be biased. It's just how I grade the greatest. Mm-hmm. When I look at Macho Man's
run... Wait a minute. Do you have a fuck-o-meter grade for the Intercontinental Champion?
No. Macho would break that. I mean, he's great. Great. He's all-time great. However, when I look at runs... First of all, Macho Man only had one run. And I'm probably going to get some backlash what I'm about to say. To me, besides the beginning and the end, the in-between stuff was not that memorable to me. I can't remember a lot of great feuds he had, a lot of great matches he had, a lot of great storylines he had.
Just like you said earlier, the B-Show main event was Macho Man and Tito. They were great.
When I say the beginning, Tito, when I say the end, Steamboat, but everything in the middle, there wasn't much there for me at least. Now, when I look at someone like Bret, we could name so many matches Bret had. I mean, the Piper one, the stuff we named already, the Piper, the Bulldog, the Perfect. I mean, hell, he even got good matches out of the friggin' Mountie, you know, TW's guy. I mean, Bret was just, his run was great. And I don't know, man, I'm not trying to be biased. Everyone knows Bret's like my number one guy. But I just feel he had better matches, better storylines, better feuds. And I'm trying to think of who else, but like, you know, Rude was like a pretty short one. Warrior didn't have no one else, unless you get later on with like Shawn Michaels. But for that 80s to 90s, I have to go with Bret Hart. If we're talking in the future or whatever, I don't really know, because at some point, again, I fell off, so I didn't keep up. And if we're talking about like worst champs of all time, I'm going to get package for it, but I just don't like the guy the same way TW doesn't like Sami Zayn. I absolutely despise Jeff Jarrett. I've never liked the guy. And it's not because like he's a heel. It's because I just don't like the guy. Mm-hmm. So for me, he's the worst IC champion of all time. And the only reason he got the push that he got during that era is because his fucking dad was working with Vince. That's the only reason. If it wasn't for that, he would have never got that push. Let's be straight here. But anyway, TW.
Well, since Macho Man was stolen from me, and since obviously Bret is my second guy, and obviously the next guy would go is Shawn, I'm gonna change it up, and you said it, and it's funny because you added something to why I already believe this. You said he didn't have a long reign, but yet I have so many awesome memories of that guy as Intercontinental Champion. To me, the larger than... Oh, I want to say this about Macho Man real quick. I think you said something about people want to change. Back when we started watching wrestling, for me, 85, guys like Hogan, the Warrior wasn't there yet, but the Warrior, Sid, wasn't there yet. But those molds, right? They were larger-than-life guys that were fucking superheroes from comic books in real life, right? You're just like, wow. You wouldn't bump into me in a hallway and guy, this guy should be a pro wrestler. But if you were to bump into them in the hallway, be like, that guy should be a pro wrestler. And most of them, that's how they got into business. Like, hey, what are you doing? We're going to make some money off you, Hogan. You're playing a bass. So what I think with Macho Man, what he had is he was a guy my size, maybe a little bigger, but you know what I mean, ballpark. He's not 6'9". He's a guy who you wouldn't bump in. He could be pumping your fucking gas, right? And you wouldn't be surprised with the look he had.
Ooh, do you want premium?
you... until you dressed him up in those costumes and you got him in a ring and he did his thing, he was still larger than life. He was a character, but he also...
Oh, yeah, you want fries with that.
If he can do it, I can do it. You know, someone like The Miz, for example, he always had that character on the MTV Real World stuff, and he loved wrestling, and that's where he got it from. And then next, he made a career out of it because he was in the right place at the right time. And I think Macho Man made guys like me think they could do it. And Bret Hart and Shawn and Perfect and all them guys. But Macho Man was the first guy to make someone my size. And granted, I'm a little kid at that point. I don't know how tall I'm going to get when I get to getting growing. But at that time, he made people believe you had a shot at doing it. And some of the best workers in the business today would have never, they wouldn't even have been job guys. Talking about my two favorites, Gargano and Adam Cole, they wouldn't even be job guys in the 80s and 90s because they would have got broken in their first squash match because they're 5 foot nothing, not even 200 pounds, maybe not even 180. They wouldn't have made it. And so Macho Man, I think, busted that door down for people, and that's why people liked him, plus the character. But my choice, best Intercontinental Champion of all time, because his world title got sabotaged by Hogan, is this guy right here. Because this guy right here is the reason I have a yellow Intercontinental title belt behind me. He's the reason I have a white one, because I thought that was his in the first damn place, but it's stupid Cody Rhodes, because he had the white world title. He had, you named it, him winning the title from the Honky Tonk Man was absolutely something that'll go down in history forever. His match with Rude and the rematch with Rude is classics. His match with Hogan was defending the Intercontinental title to win the World Heavyweight title, and it was the first time, only time, well, it's probably happened a million times since, but at that WrestleMania, there'd never been a title for title, at least for internet standards, for whoever won got both belts. It never happened before since, you know, when I was a kid. And so this guy right here solidified me being a champion or Intercontinental Champion fan of that belt. Obviously, Steamboat and Savage dug the nails in there, and then Warrior having it. And Bret and all those guys got it after Warrior, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so all those guys having it, by then I already had loved that belt, and it's because of this guy right here. He made the belt part of his costume. And then when he won the world title, I got a powder blue one because of him. I'm going to get a purple one probably because I'm an idiot and I get all this Biden beer money. I'm just going to spend it on title belts. But the Ultimate Warrior's world title reign, I still loved it. I hated who he lost to. I really hated who he lost to. But who cost him it? Macho Man. It led to my second favorite match of all time, which is the retirement match between the Warrior and Savage. And you can't think Intercontinental title and not have those three, four guys we've talked about's name pop in your head. Is you say Intercontinental Champion, you're thinking Bret, Shawn, Warrior, Savage. Tito was my very first favorite wrestler, and he was the champion when I started watching wrestling. But Tito didn't have charisma, damn it, so he became El Matador. Then he had to shit in spades. But Ultimate Warrior is my pick. And the worst, you already apologized to the ladies, so I'm just going to have to make them mad again, is China. Because she had no business being the Intercontinental Champion. None. I get it.
China was more over than Jeff Jarrett.
But we're not thinking the greatest. Because you know who I was going to pick instead of China? Only because I think it's bullshit. I really, really like Zack Ryder. And I love that he had his WrestleMania moment winning the IC title. To lose it the very next day sucked the life right out of it for me. Because I thought, holy shit, they're finally going to give this guy a run. And then he loses it the very next day. I remember just being pissed off about it. Like, why even give it to him? But you know what? He retweeted the other day. That's his WrestleMania moment. I'm glad he got it. And you know what? He's probably just like the three of us, a huge fan of that belt because he's basically our age, maybe a couple years younger. Younger than me, probably same age as you two. And he probably was a huge fan of that belt. I love that he pays homage. Guys like Sting and the Warrior with his gear. He's got that outfit that looks like the Warriors USA outfit. Then he's got this jacket like Macho Man and Sting had with the U.S. I like that he's a fan of the business. I like that he got to be the IC champion. I just hate that it was for one day.
All right. So, you know what, Reflectionites, we've delved into every kind of subject that the professor wanted, and it came out perfectly. You know, we didn't know where we were going to go with the belt, and it worked beautifully. I'm glad that I have these guys, TW. I'm glad I have these guys, JB, who understand what the professor wanted out of a show, out of a pro wrestling spotlight. So before we close out, guys, let's try to change it one more time, and I'm going to go to JB here. JB, are you with me, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you, I know, again, you say that, you know, I don't watch wrestling, you know, I understand that. But even in the times that you've picked, you were able to pick your favorite, you was able to pick your least favorite. Who was your underrated Intercontinental Champion of all time, in your humble opinion? Of course, it's subjective. Who did you like with the belt?
This is such a hard question because I can't really comment past, like, you know, 2000.
It's okay.
You know, here's the problem. Every guy that won the friggin' title is a friggin' Hall of Famer, pretty much, or a future Hall of Famer. They're not already a Hall of Famer. So to say underrated, that's like, I mean, from, I'm just thinking 80 to 95. Like, I can't say perfect. Perfect's not underrated. I can't say Rude. I can't say Bulldog. These guys are Hall of Famers.
What about Owen?
He's not, you call Owen underrated? What the fuck?
I'm just giving you a name.
Now, let me say this. I'm going to turn your question, because in my era, there is none. They were all rated very highly. I'm going to turn this question around. Of all the people that had the IC title that never got to the next level, who was the best one? Are you okay with that?
Who is the best one?
Who did go on the world title?
Who did not, of all the guys who won the IC title, which one of them were the best, in my opinion, to not have won the world title?
That's hard.
Easy.
I mean,
that's now,
for me, it's so easy.
Right.
Go ahead.
Me and TW might have the same answer. For me, it's Mr. Perfect.
Hands down.
I mean, just 100%. Great on the mic, great in the ring. Just, if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, there's a strong chance Mr. Perfect would have probably had a world title run. And probably the same thing with Rick Rude, to be fair, but definitely 100% Mr. Perfect. Also, before we move on to UNTW, I just want to say, because TW mentioned something earlier, and he was talking about like an oddball IC thing, and one came to my mind, and it's such a great memory for me. I'll never forget, on this night, I had a horrible headache, and it's the night that 123 Kid, who we didn't even know who he was, came and beat Razor Ramon. But if people remember, on that same night, a random guy came out in the audience to challenge Shawn Michaels and won the IC title at the close of that show.
I hate you.
That was my.
I've been waiting to say that, and you said you didn't have an answer, and then you said it anyway.
That was my oddball. And Marty Jannetty was so... Actually, you want underrated? There you go. Marty Jannetty is so underrated. As TW likes to say, if it wasn't for his demons, Marty could have probably been bigger than Shawn, maybe. He didn't have his personality, yo.
Marty didn't have demons. Marty had a good time. What are you talking about?
Yeah. He's still having a good time somewhere right now, having a good time killing somebody.
But he was great in the ring. And, I mean, go back and watch some of his old Rocker matches. He could go with Shawn, if not even better than Shawn, but he just didn't have the personality and the charisma. But, yeah, Marty, very underrated. I don't think he could have ever been world champ or anything, but definitely underrated.
Okay, TW, go ahead. I guess he stole you.
I'm going to answer your question in the way that you asked it, right? I think you said which one was an underrated run, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's Jannetty's, because it was done so perfectly. He got thrown through the barbershop window. He basically got dismissed right after that. Tito's Santana is Michael's opponent at that first WrestleMania as the boy toy, when it should have been built up to Marty. Marty's basically an afterthought. And the Rockers never being world tag team champions is garbage. It should have been. And they did win it, and they reversed it because of the rope broke. Whatever the reason. I think they got in a fight or something and got in trouble again. But they were idiots. But I think Jannetty took a lot of the heat, was the scapegoat for a lot of the stuff the Rockers did. And obviously, him taking the heat is the reason Shawn got to ascend to higher levels. Didn't he take Scary Sherry from Shawn, too? She went with him, busted her through a mirror or something.
Yes. Roman 93, I think.
That whole thing, even though he wasn't champion long, and he lost it right back to Shawn, I think, and all that stuff, it was booked perfectly as A, out of nowhere, B, vindication for Jannetty exacting his revenge on Shawn for throwing him through the barbershop window. And now Marty Jannetty is a former Intercontinental Champion that can't be taken. And the cool time to be Intercontinental Champion, because it wasn't trading hands every other week like it does now. It meant something when he won it, and it meant something when he lost it back to Shawn. And other than Shawn winning 900 tag belts with 900 different people and Marty winning it with Bob Holly for some reason and 1-2-3 Kid, unless it was Bob Holly and the 1-2-3 Kid. But Jannetty and 1-2-3 Kid is a poor consolation prize for Jannetty and Michaels not being tag team champions. So I'm glad it's the opposite of Zach, right? Uh-huh. Even though he had a short run, it made sense. Nothing about Zach winning that belt and losing it the next day made sense, other than here's your carrot, fuck you, internet. That's what that took. I took that as fuck you, internet.
And I enjoyed it. So I guess I'm cynical. Can I answer?
This is my last thing. Okay. My last thing, and then you got the floor. Regarding Jannetty, Jannetty went away for periods of time, but go back and watch any Royal Rumble. Every time he hit that ring, and I feel like they booked this on purpose every time, obviously. Every time he would come back to the Royal Rumble, him and Michaels would always get into the onslaught, and the crowd would erupt. And it just sucks that they never had that WrestleMania match. But yeah, that just goes to show the kind of level and business that they could have done. And, you know, I agree with TW 100%. I totally forgot.
And then a few weeks ago, me and Professor did a show that ended with me going down a rabbit hole just watching YouTube after YouTube. And I watched the Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty reuniting on Raw when Shawn was DX and him and Marty were guys. And I was like, fucking one more chance. They could have put the tag belts on them and didn't. And I just thought, damn it. The Rockers should have the tag belts on their resume. I like the Rockers in the AWA. So you can imagine how much more I liked them. And they were the Midnight Rockers. And to me, like, you had the argument of – there's people who think Demolition are better than the Road Warriors. I don't know what
they're
smoking.
Excuse me, I'm one of those people.
Okay, tell me what you're smoking. No, that's – yeah, the Rockers. So anyways, so I will say this. Demolition took lemons and made lemonade out of it, right? I think they are the 100% polar opposite of Road Warrior clones that did something with it versus Powers of Pain, which was blatantly Road Warrior clones with zero charisma, and even having that dude Rick Rude or Paul Jones.
Can I answer the question? You're going into tag teams.
No, listen. You're going down the rocket. About two Intercontinental Champions, Marty.
You're talking about Demolition and Powers of Pain.
No. I'm giving you an example of that. I think the Midnight Rockers, who were blatantly the AWA, and have the Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express and merge their names, I think they are better than the original, Shawn and Marty, as a team, not just individually what they've done since. I love the Rock and Roll Express for what they did in the time they did it. They were arguably the most popular guys in the company. But the Rockers were better than them in every single aspect. Maybe not talking, because Ricky, no. We're talking about Shawn and Marty, both Intercontinental Champions. Neidhart never won the Intercontinental belt. How many tag teams had both guys? He did? So anyways, God rest his soul. But how many other tag teams are there where they both won the Intercontinental title? Not Shawn and Triple H. That's a stable.
Two dudes with attitudes.
Oh boy! Okay. Can I answer that question that you said?
That's also not a tag team.
Can I answer that question, JB? Yes. Can you ask that question again so I can think about
chop that tree down?
Ask it right.
What question?
The question is so this way the professor can give a great answer about the Intercontinental
Champion. What's the answer?
Because I forgot. Because of the rabbit hole, I forgot the question.
You mean your original question?
Your question.
I don't know what my question was.
The guys who IC champion who never went on to be a world champion, who's
right.
the best?
Of all the guys who won the IC title that has never become the world champion, who was the best of that group?
Thank God that TW didn't say it, and I was waiting for him to say it. I'm going to say it.
Say
Razor Ramon.
And Ken Shamrock.
Hey, yo.
Either one.
What the fuck? Actually, pretty good.
Those guys were over, JB. Go back and watch Ken Shamrock's introductions. Over.
I'm laughing that he didn't say the answer. So I'm going to use Razor Ramon as both answers of underrated and the man that was a great Intercontinental.
How is he underrated?
You know the funny thing, JB. No, because you're looking at it from the eyes of, he is in a Hall of Famer. I'm looking at it from the guise of what we saw in the 90s. Remember, he didn't get the Intercontinental Championship out right the gate. His first title that he challenged you was actually your man, Bret the Hitman Hart, for the WWE title at Royal Rumble 93. So he didn't he didn't taste that Intercontinental gold, and he didn't get that prestige yet until later in 93. And the validation of Razor Ramon's title run wasn't, you know, he didn't get that stamp of approval, as TW would say, until WrestleMania 10 with the ladder match. And probably people not give him the credit. They give Shawn Michaels the credit.
Yeah, because it was Shawn versus the ladder.
So I understand.
I'm going to watch that match on the Peacock.
But think about it, JB. I understand what you're talking about, the Hall of Famer, but Reflection Nights and Magnificent Seven, think about this. Razor Ramon is underrated because of the dance partners that he worked with. I mean, again, SummerSlam 94, he led against Kevin Nash or Diesel, you know, with Walter Payton on his side. He had those matches with Jeff Jarrett and Shawn Michaels and Dean Douglas. So he made the Intercontinental.
The first four-time Intercontinental champion ever?
Yeah, he was the one that broke,
broke best record.
Who
did he lose it to? Shawn won in SummerSlam, right? Shawn won from him?
No, Razor Ramon won in SummerSlam. Razor Ramon won both ladder matches.
He won both?
Yeah. No, he lost the second ladder match. Trust me.
Are you sure?
Shawn got his belt back, yeah.
He got his belt back.
I was a Shawn fan. I remember. Yeah. It was the payback.
Yeah, so he lost it to Shawn. He lost it to Jared. He lost it to Dean Douglas, and he lost it to Goldust. So I don't remember if he got it back.
He beat Dean Douglas for the title.
Yeah. No, he lost it.
Dean Douglas got it from Shawn Michaels.
There was one of those things in Raw, like you talked about. There was a Raw thing. That's what I'm trying to say. Again,
Douglas had the belt twice?
I think so. It was so short.
He won by forfeit when Shawn got his ass kicked by the damn Marines.
Didn't Goldust beat him one time?
Goldust beat him one time, too. So it's again. Remember, we can't remember every legacy of the Intercontinental Champion. But I'm glad that TW didn't steal the professor's answer. He's underrated. Because
it's perfect. It's perfect is the guy who should have been the WWF World Champion. 100%. Razor should have been because of popularity. Every aspect of earning it. Kurt Hennig should have been WWF.
We are running out of time, JB, because, again, it's WrestleMania weekend. Okay, go ahead.
Kurt Hennig would have never had a chance with the title because it was Hogan's era. But had Razor Ramon, a.k.a. Scott Hall, stuck around in WWE, do you think he would have ever had a run? Question to both of you guys.
Yeah, I think so. But then again, he went to WCW and didn't have one either because he's always high or drunk.
The entire clique would have had a run. Come on. You don't think Diesel
The answer was simple because guess who had it? Because Vince McMahon liked Diesel more than he liked Razor Ramon as the champ. That's why he gave him the Workman's title to Razor and gave the Flashy.
This was one of the worst champs ever.
Doesn't matter. That was Vince's. That was Vince's call on that. He wanted the big guy. So that's.
He was looking for another Hogan, and that's
right.
Bob Backlund's second reign is pretty shit.
Bob Backlund was untapped potential reign.
Did he have it for a year?
Incredible, and he beat my guy. No, he had a title.
He had it for 8 days.
Yeah, 8 days, and he lost in like 8 seconds.
He beat Bret at Survivor Series when Owen threw the towel in.
Yeah, and like a week later, Diesel beat him at MSG in 8 seconds.
Diesel beat him at Survivor Series a year later.
No. A year later, Bret beat Diesel.
He's dragging too much.
And that's when Diesel turned
heel. I thought Kevin Nash beat Bob Backlund at Survivor Series.
No, it was at MSG in a house show.
This is why I'm the professor, and I will validate JB's answer with that. And with that, we end the Pro Wrestling Spotlight with the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship legacy, lineage, moments, and matches. We hope that you enjoyed it here. Next week, we're going to Pro Wrestling Spotlight again, and TW, pick the belt. Pick the belt that you want to talk about. I want you to, because we do it on Twitch, TW, you had to do it. Next week, we're going to talk about the U.S. Heavyweight Championship, the NWA days, the WCW days, maybe a little bit of the WWE days. Who knows? But we're going to try
to...
It's part of it, so we're going to try to give our best
AJ
style.
With
our lineage, our moments, and matches. JB, are you going to be ready for next week? Are you going to be here next week for it?
Yes, I'm bringing out friggin' Dustin versus, who was it? Dustin versus, what's his name,
Blacktop Bully.
Yeah. No. Okay. Blacktop Bully, come on. At Bash at the Beach or Blast at the Beach, whatever the fuck, the Iron Man match.
Rick Rude.
Yes. 30-minute Iron Man match. Great match.
Okay, save that, JB. But now give out those socials. Give out your UFC podcast info, the Film Frequency podcast info, and let's get out of here.
I can reach on Twitter at the P1JB. That's at THEP1JB. Of course, I also do, as Professor said, I also do a film review podcast with my brother, CEO Hayes. You can reach that at Film Bros Pod, FilmBrosPod. And finally, I have a UFC/MMA podcast called Cage Theory, where me and Blake Bulletproof Troop run down MMA and UFC. And you can reach us on Twitter at Cage Theory Pod.
Alright, TW, give out those socials, and you know, you're eating fish, you're going to eat shit, you're going to eat crap, what else are you going to be eating?
The fish soon. Our partner's up, she's in Florida right now, so we got to wait. I'm updating. All right, so Twitter is at TommyWonder19 or at TheTommyWonder. Those are two different ones. One is for wrestling, one is for politics. And then also my Instagram is TommyWonder19. And then I figured it out finally. My Snapchat is at NumberWonder. Just one word, number wonder, no numbers, just NUMBER. My Facebook is facebook.com/TommyWonder for my real name, which is Tom Bryant. And then the other one is Facebook, just search Tommy Wonder. I think both of them come up. I have one for when I get in trouble on the regular Facebook. And then our guys that host his show for us, bigvetobrand.wixsite.com, that's WIXSITE. Also, patreon.com/TheBigVetoBrand. And then our good man, the professor's boss, his if he was going to go full-on dude-to-dude, his lover, Big Ray, is at Big Ray.
Did you see that Facebook pic? Did you see that Facebook pic that looked like he was getting his, you know, it looked like he was jizzing in his pants? But anyway, that's another story for another day.
I've seen him making me eat black
jelly. That's PWR After Dark.
Yeah. Well, and of course you can find me on my Twitter at PWHustle, P-R-O-F, that's PWHustle Prof. And of course, find my guys from the PWHustle, Mr. Infinite Fringe himself, Billy Ray Valentine at Obi-Wan, you know me. And of course, the King of the Reactions, A-Track Brown, the dirtiest of the city at A-Track Dastly. Again, next week, Pro Wrestling Spotlight. We're going to talk about the United States Heavyweight Championship. Again, the series is going to continue. I don't know if we're going to talk about the Big Gold Belt. We might talk about the Wing Eagle Belt. Who knows? We might even talk about the Globe Belt. I don't know. I'm
now a crown.
Who cares? I'm drinking right now. So anyway, we hope that you guys are enjoying the WrestleMania week. I know it's been long. And of course, thank you for joining us for at least these last 90 minutes. We hope you enjoy yourself. We hope that you learn something here, because the Pro Wrestling Spotlight does one thing. It educates the mind, the body, and the soul. And for that, I'm the professor. That's the Prodigal One, JB. And that's Mr. Wonderful TW saying good night and see you next time, Reflectionites. Give me a war cry, JB.
Professor, tell Paul Pierce we said hi.
Let it know. What did you say, TW?
Said hi when you're stripping for him next time.
Shut the hell up. All right.